Welcome to today's episode. I'm Layla Reyes, and I'm broadcasting from a serene retreat center where I've been spending time reflecting and preparing for an upcoming talk that I'll be giving early next month. The focus of that talk is breaking free from the lingering impact that child sexual abuse has on our adult lives. Surprise, surprise. This work is deeply personal to me, not only because of my own experiences, but because of the countless others who have bravely shared their stories with me. Whenever I share that I was sexually abused by my father, the response is often heartbreaking yet familiar. People tell me that they too experienced childhood sexual abuse. And it's become so common that I'm surprised when I don't hear those words, me too. Here at the retreat, the first person that I met shared with me that she was sexually abused by her brother. This encounter made me curious to know how prevalent sibling sexual abuse is, and how it affects the family dynamics. I have friends and clients and colleagues who all have experienced this form of abuse, yet I haven't heard much outside of the personal stories that people share with me. So I decided to dive a little deeper into the research on sibling sexual abuse. In today's episode, I invite you to join me on this exploration and approach this conversation with curiosity and an open heart. I'm discovering what a challenging topic sibling sexual abuse is, and I hope that this conversation will help at least one person by shedding some light on the topic and talking about it. By breaking the silence and understanding the impact sibling sexual abuse has on individuals and families, we can move toward healing and getting free of the impact it might have on our adult lives. This episode is not just about sharing information. It's about fostering a space where we can invite people to begin to heal the wounds that run through families affected by sibling sexual abuse. Whether this topic touches your life directly or not, I encourage you to listen with empathy and consider how we can collectively support those who have endured this silent trauma. Sibling sexual abuse is one of those topics that makes us uncomfortable. It's a deeply troubling issue that remains a common yet underreported form of child sexual abuse. Despite its prevalence, it appears that sibling sexual abuse is often misunderstood and neglected in both research and intervention. Unlike other forms of sexual abuse, sibling sexual abuse occurs within the intimate daily interaction between siblings, which can make it particularly insidious and challenging to address. The effects of sibling sexual abuse ripple through the entire family, creating a web of trauma that affects not just the victim and the perpetrator, but also non-abused siblings, parents, and even extended family members. And so we need to talk about this, not just as an issue between two siblings, but as a complex family-wide trauma that requires a holistic approach to healing. The impact of sibling sexual abuse doesn't stop at the abuse itself. No abuse ever does, but it extends into the fabric of the family's relationships, communication patterns, and emotional well-being. By understanding sibling sexual abuse as a multifaceted issue that affects the entire family system, we can start to move toward interventions and foster healing for everyone involved, rather than just focusing on the individuals directly involved in the abuse. Sibling sexual abuse appears to be way more prevalent than I even realized. I was surprised to realize to read that it's considered more common than parent-child incest, yet it's frequently minimized or dismissed even by those closest to the family. This minimization is often rooted in misconceptions that sibling sexual abuse is merely innocent play or natural curiosity among siblings. These misconceptions, combined with societal taboos and cultural norms, contribute to the underreporting of sibling sexual abuse, leaving countless survivors without the support that they really need. I've read Tony Kavanaugh's booklet. I've talked about that in a previous podcast about what's normal and healthy sexuality in children. And one distinction that she makes about whether the sexuality between siblings is abuse or innocent play has to do with the ages of the children, but the ages between the two children, you know, like playing doctor or show me yours and I'll show you mine, which is part of an information gathering process and part of understanding someone starting to understand their body parts. So I'm really curious about this distinction as well, and we'll explore that in the coming months. Either way, the societal silence around sibling sexual abuse is reinforced by family secrecy. Many families are reluctant to acknowledge sibling sexual abuse, fearing the stigma, the shame, and even the potential consequences of exposing the abuse. In some cases, parents may downplay the abuse to protect the family's reputation or to avoid the painful reality that one of their children that it's even possible that they could harm another. So this culture of silence not only prevents victims from seeking help, but it also perpetuates the cycle of abuse, allowing the trauma to fester and to grow over time. The underreporting of sibling sexual abuse isn't just a result of denial or secrecy. It's also a reflection of the lack of awareness and understanding within the broader community. So many people, including professionals, are not equipped to recognize the signs of sexual abuse. So I'm going to name them here. I'm going to name some of these signs that abuse might be happening. Sudden changes in behavior, including changes in appetite or becoming clingy or withdrawn. Mood changes such as sadness or anxiety or irritability or even anger outbursts. Nightmares, sleep problems, or extreme fears without an obvious explanation. There can be regressions in behavior, including bedwetting or thumb sucking. There can be an avoiding or exhibiting fear toward their sibling or particular places, like parts of the house. There could be in it could show up in their play or their writings or their drawings with sexual or frightening images. Victims of sibling sexual abuse can engage in sexual activities with toys, objects, or other children. They can refuse to talk about a secret that they have with a sibling. And they can develop a discomfort with being touched or hugged. Out of the normal, their normal behavior, their normal comfort with that. There can be a resistance to routine bathing or toileting, or having help with getting dressed or undressed. And there can even be some body indications like frequent stomach aches or illness with no real identifiable reason. There can be unexplained soreness or pain or bruising and redness of the genitals or mouth. And so, you know what, as I was reading this in the research around the sibling sexual abuse, these are all signs, the same signs for any type of sexual abuse. So if you notice any of these signs in your children or children that you're in contact with, don't turn the other way. Get support, investigate, go a little bit deeper. And there is a caveat to getting support. I'll talk about it a little bit later as well. I should say get the right support because many people are also ill-equipped to provide appropriate support when abuse is disclosed. It could be from their own discomfort with or lack of awareness, recognition, awareness. You know, they may just not be having the comfort with seeing the signs even. So this lack of recognition and response leaves survivors isolated and vulnerable, often struggling with the long-term psychological effects of the abuse well into adulthood. So don't give up if you don't find appropriate help right away. As we bring sibling sexual abuse into this conversation, it's essential to break through the barriers that prevent disclosure. By raising awareness and promoting open, honest dialogue about sibling sexual abuse, even like knowing what the signs are, we can begin to dismantle the societal taboos that keep the issue hidden in the shadows. Only then Can we create a supportive environment where survivors feel safe to share their experience and access the healing that they need? So I want to explore not just the prevalence of sibling sexual abuse, but also the deep societal and cultural forces that contribute to its underreporting. So by understanding these dynamics, we can start to shift the narrative around sibling sexual abuse, ensuring that survivors are heard and supported and empowered to heal. So when we talk about the impact of sibling sexual abuse, the focus is often on the victim and understandably the perpetrator. But what about the siblings who weren't directly abused? Their experiences and emotions are just as real, just as valid, and often just as traumatic, only in a different way. Non-abused siblings are frequently caught in the crossfire, navigating a confusing, a painful landscape that shakes the very foundation of their family life. It can be very disorienting and confusing. So imagine growing up believing that your family is one way, only to have that belief completely shattered by the disclosure of abuse between siblings. For non-abused siblings, this revelation is often accompanied by a flood of intense emotions. There can be shock, there can be sadness, anger, there can be guilt, and definitely confusion. It doesn't make sense that this could happen in your family. So the sibling that thought that they knew now carries a different narrative. And this shift can be deeply disorienting. They may feel guilty for not noticing the signs or for not being able to protect their sibling. They might even wrestle with guilt for not being the victim themselves, questioning why they were, quote unquote, spared. So these emotions don't just fade away. They can linger, evolving into long-term psychological challenges like anxiety and depression, or even secondary trauma, where the non-abused sibling experiences trauma symptoms similar to those of the primary victim. It's not uncommon for these siblings to internalize the pain and chaos around them, leading to struggles with identity and self-worth, and even troubles in their relationships that extend far into adulthood. So I learned about a powerful concept that comes into play called rescripting the past. And non-abused siblings are then forced to reevaluate once they find out what happened. They have this information now. Now they have to reevaluate all their childhood memories, piecing together a new reality that contradicts what they once believed about their family. Memories of family vacations, holiday gatherings, or just everyday moments of the family life are suddenly tainted by this knowledge of what happened beneath the surface. This process of rescripting is painful. It can be painful because it involves grieving not only the loss of an idealized past, but also the loss of the family as they knew it. The family dynamics post-disclosure can be filled with tension and complexity. Non-abused siblings can find themselves in a mediator role. They can feel torn between supporting the survivor and navigating their own relationship with the sibling who caused harm. And this balancing act can be incredibly difficult. On one hand, they want to be there for their sibling who was hurt, but on the other hand, they may still care for the sibling who caused the harm, despite the anger and betrayal that they feel. This internal conflict can be exhausting and isolating, and it's not always easy to find a safe space to express these conflicting emotions. So the strain on the sibling relationships can be pretty intense. What was once a source of comfort and camaraderie could now end up feeling fractured, intense, or even hostile. The bonds between siblings can become strained or even severed altogether, especially if the family falls into patterns of denial or secrecy. So when the family avoids talking about the abuse or refuses to acknowledge its impact, the non-abused siblings are left in a state of emotional limbo, kind of unsure of how to process their feelings or how to move forward. However, there is hope. And I think this is across the board, open communication, though difficult, can foster resilience and healing within the family. When siblings and parents are willing to talk openly and honestly about what happened, it can create an environment where everyone's emotions and experiences are validated. And this kind of communication doesn't erase the pain. And I think it also needs to be a learned communication. I don't think we just automatically know how to do that. That's why we need some help in that area. But this kind of a communication, like I said, doesn't erase the pain, but it can pave the way for rebuilding trust and connection. And unfortunately, this openness is often hindered by family denial or the fear of making things worse. But when families can push through that fear, then the healing process can begin. It can't happen without it. I don't think so. I mean, I do think that you can do it on your own. Like, if your family doesn't want to do it, you can still heal on your own. But what you have to do is push through your fear, then, and the healing process can begin. So, if we're able to do that, then the survivor and everyone affected by the abuse can be involved. But you can do it on your own. I've seen open communication to be a doorway that leads to breaking free from the impact that abuse has on your present experiences. And that's pretty consistent. Whether your family's participating or not in the healing process, you're not, it's not a death sentence here for sure. Might be a little more difficult, but you can do it. So this segment was really highlighting the overlooked impact of sibling sexual abuse on the non-abused siblings, and their journey's a pretty complicated one. It's filled with emotional turbulence and the challenge of navigating shifting family dynamics. So by understanding their experiences, we can begin to offer the support that they need and deserve, ensuring that their voices are heard and that their healing is prioritized. So let's explore for a minute the profound impact that sibling sexual abuse has on parents, which is that's another thing that we would probably put in the last category. You know, parents are supposed to, know how, whatever, know how to do this, know how to handle it. But the truth is if this hasn't happened to you before, you don't know how as a parent. You don't know. You don't, there's no manual here. So the journey can be one of immense responsibility and incredible emotional strain. And the challenge of holding their family together in the face of overwhelming adversity can be, well, overwhelming. So by understanding the pressures that parents face and the paths that they have to navigate, we can better support them as they work to rebuild their family one step at a time. So when a parent learns that one of their children has been sexually abused by another, I just imagine that their world is turned upside down. The shock, the disbelief, the heartbreak can be overwhelming. But what follows after that can be even more challenging. Parents suddenly find themselves in this impossible position of trying to protect and support all their children, the child who was harmed, the child who caused harm, and sometimes the non-abused siblings who are pretty much caught in the middle. So it's a heavy burden that can shake the very foundation of the family. In the aftermath of sibling sexual abuse, parents can feel like they've become wardens rather than caregivers. And the home, once a place of safety and comfort, can end up feeling like a prison where every move is monitored and every interaction is scrutinized. And what an incredible responsibility and pressure. Parents might feel the need to impose strict rules, separate the siblings, or even consider removing one child from the home entirely. So this shift in parenting, moving from nurturing to managing, can leave parents feeling drained, isolated, and really incredibly unsure of themselves. They don't know. They're trying to do what's best, but the emotional toll is immense, and they don't know. We don't come into this world knowing what to do in these situations, so we have to learn. So, adding to this stress is the strain then on the couple's relationship. With the focus, when the focus shifts entirely to the children's safety and emotional well-being, then there's little room left for romantic partnership. Conversations that once it revolved around shared interests or future plans or even mundane day-to-day life are now consumed by crisis management. And parents can find themselves arguing over the best course of action, or they may simply stop talking about anything other than the children. This neglect can cause feelings of isolation and resentment and disconnect between partners, and that can further complicate the family's ability to navigate the crisis together. In many cases, couples might feel like they're drifting apart just when they need each other the most. The stress of managing the aftermath of sibling sexual abuse can push them to their limits and testing the resilience of their relationship. Without proper support, this strain can lead to long-term damage, making it even harder for the family to heal. And that is not even bringing into consideration, the research that I was am bringing to you today doesn't even bring into play the families of divorce and the impact that that will have, or negative impact, or the strain that play is placed then on the family at that point. So the reality is that after sibling abuse is disclosed, the families need to adopt a new normal. They have to make an adaptation, and this adaptation is rarely straightforward. It's rarely easy. It requires what's known as, and I learned about this term in this research. It's called split parenting, where one parent primarily supports the victim while the other focuses on the child who caused harm. And this division of roles can be really painful. Parents can feel guilty for not being able to be there for all their children equally, or they might feel resentment toward their partner for the role that they've taken on. The family dynamic is fundamentally altered, and it's not uncommon for parents to grieve the loss of the family that they once knew. But in the midst of the upheaval of all of this, there is potential for growth. There is. Over time, and with a lot of hard work, families can develop a new sense of closeness and resilience. They might learn to communicate more openly, to support one another in ways that they never had to before. Parents might discover strengths that they didn't know that they had, and siblings might find new ways to connect. However, this process of adaptation is incredibly complex, and it absolutely does not happen overnight. And it doesn't happen without support. Like I said a couple times, we don't come into this world knowing how to handle these things. We have to learn. So we need support either from therapists or support groups or extended family. So the growth that happens, it though real, doesn't mean that everything returns to normal. The family dynamic is different. There's a new family dynamic, and the scars of what happened remain. But families can learn to live with these changes and to find new ways to thrive together. Lots of hard work, but it can be done. The key here is in recognizing that healing is a journey and not a destination. I love that. Healing is a journey, not a destination. It's about learning to navigate the new terrain of their lives with compassion and with patience and a commitment to supporting one another through the ups and downs. So when a family faces the devastation of sibling sexual abuse, they're not just dealing with the immediate trauma. They're also grappling with the long-term effects that ripple through every member of the family. So the need for therapeutic support is undeniable. Many families find themselves navigating this complex and really painful journey without the guidance that they really need. So this is something to, that the research has shown is there, most people are doing this on their own, but help is needed to do it well. And good help. Not just any help, but good help. If you find not good help, keep going till you find good help. So, healing from se sibling sexual abuse requires more than just individual therapy for the victim or the perpetrator. It really calls for a holistic approach that considers the entire family system, every member of the family, parents, non-abused siblings, and even extended family, where appropriate, will need support. Why? Because sibling sexual abuse doesn't just impact the individuals directly involved. It disrupts the whole family dynamic. The safety, the trust, and the communication within the family are they're all compromised. And restoring these elements really requires a collective effort. A family systems approach to therapy is really important. And this means that addressing the needs of everyone involved, creating an environment where emotional, physical, and sexual safety are prioritized for everyone. It's about helping the family find new ways to connect, new ways to communicate, and to rebuild trust. For instance, therapy might focus on helping parents learn how to talk openly with their children about what happened, how to set appropriate boundaries, and how to support each other through the healing process. Unfortunately, many families dealing with sibling sexual abuse feel abandoned by the very systems that are supposed to help them. Social welfare services, in particular, can be a source of frustration. Too often, these services provide incorrect or insufficient advice, leaving parents feeling even more isolated and unsupported or undersupported. So imagine the helplessness of a parent who's trying to do everything right, only to be met with roadblocks and dead ends at every turn. This lack of professional support can add another layer of trauma, making an already difficult situation even harder to navigate. Effective therapy for survivors of sibling sexual abuse must be nuanced and comprehensive. It's really not enough to simply address the trauma. They need help rebuilding their sense of self-worth, overcoming guilt and shame, and finding a healthy support network. Survivors often, not always, but often carry a burden of shame, believing that they were somehow responsible for the abuse or that they could have done something to stop it. And therapy should really focus on dismantling these harmful beliefs and empowering survivors to reclaim their lives. What about the perpetrators? Therapy for them is equally critical, though it requires a different focus. Perpetrators need to confront the harm that they've caused, which can be very difficult if they're still in denial or if they themselves were victims of abuse, which is often the case. A therapist's role here is to guide them through taking responsibility for their actions, understanding the impact of their behavior, and if applicable, processing their own history of being abused. So this kind of therapy isn't about punishment. It's about preventing further harm and helping the person who caused harm develop healthier ways of relating to others. So let me share a little story that might resonate with you. My client, I'm going to call her Sarah. I worked with her as an adult, and she was sexually abused by her older brother Jake when she was 9 years old. When the abuse came to light, the family was devastated. And Sarah felt betrayed and isolated, while Jake struggled to understand the gravity of what he had done. And their parents were overwhelmed by guilt and confusion and turned to social services for help. But the advice that they received was conflicting and unhelpful. They were told to separate the siblings immediately and avoid discussing the details of what happened. And this advice only deepened the family's sense of isolation and fear. Eventually, great to Sarah's parents, they did continue. They found a therapist who understood the need for a holistic approach. And the therapist worked with the entire family, helping them to talk openly about the abuse, helping them to set clear boundaries, helping them to rebuild trust. And so Sarah received support to address her feelings of shame and guilt. And Jake also began to confront his actions and take responsibility for the harm he caused. And so the parents, where they were paralyzed by indecision, learned how to navigate this new reality together, supporting both of their children without sacrificing their own relationship. Like, bravo, they did a really good job. Even though the abuse had an impact in Sarah, even though they did this great job, Sarah still had an impact. That abuse still impacted her adult years, her adult life, her relationship, which is why she became my client later on in her life. But this story highlights the transformative power of holistic tailored therapy. And it's a reminder that while the road to healing is long and challenging, it's also possible with the right support. So I want to emphasize the importance, really, here and just reiterate this, the importance of comprehensive family-centered therapeutic support. Sibling sexual abuse is not just an individual trauma, it's a family trauma. And to truly heal, we need to address the needs of every person involved, ensuring that no one is left behind. And this is how we create a path to lasting recovery, not just for survivors, but the entire family. And I'll tell you this, if we include the person who caused harm, then just maybe they're going to grow up to not harm anybody else if they're getting the support that they need, which is what happened in my personal situation. I participated in a holistic program where my entire family was invited to participate, and my father was able to take responsibility and repair his relationship with me. So I know that that works. He didn't harm other people after that. And so it works. It works. It works. It works. But if you don't get help, then you're inside of the shame, and shame can lead to, for a perpetrator, shame can then lead to additional, like a cycle of abuse. You feel so bad about yourself, and then you promise not to do it again, and then you do it again, and then you feel bad about yourself, and it kind of keeps you stuck. But if you get help, you're going to be able to really see what's underneath the motivation or what draws you to cause that type of harm. So, as we wrap up this conversation, it's really important to talk about what comes next. Addressing sibling sexual abuse is not just about responding to the immediate crisis. It's about changing the way we understand and handle these situations long term. The journey forward requires a commitment to both research and advocacy, ensuring that families receive the comprehensive support that they need to heal. One of the biggest challenges I think that we face is the lack of in-depth research on sibling sexual abuse. And while we know more, while we know it's more common than we think, we still don't fully understand its long-term impact, especially on the non-abused siblings and the overall family dynamics. So imagine being the sibling who wasn't directly abused, but who is nonetheless deeply affected by the trauma. Your life is turned upside down, yet there's very little guidance available on how to navigate this new reality. Without more research, these siblings remain invisible and their struggles overlooked in favor of focusing solely on the victim and the perpetrator. I'm sure that I'll have more to say about that later on. So we also need to explore how sibling sexual abuse plays out in different cultural contexts. Every family is unique, and cultural norms and values can significantly influence how sibling sexual abuse is perceived, reported, and addressed. So tailored interventions that respect these differences are crucial if we want to support all families effectively. For example, in some cultures, discussing sexual matters is taboo, making it even harder for families to seek help. So understanding these nuances can lead to more effective strategies that resonate with the specific needs for diverse communities. To truly support families dealing with sibling sexual abuse, we need to rethink our approach. Traditionally, the research shows that sibling sexual abuse cases have been handled with a focus on the victim and perpetrator, often neglecting the broader family dynamics. But families, as I've said, families are complex systems, and when one part is hurt, the whole system suffers. We need to advocate for a shift away from purely victim-perpetrator model toward a more holistic understanding of the sibling dynamics and family dynamics. So consider this. When sibling sexual abuse comes to light, the entire family is thrown into crisis. Parents feel torn between supporting the victim and not completely abandoning the child who caused harm. Non-abused siblings can feel lost and confused and guilty for not knowing what was happening. And these dynamics are intricate, they're complex, and they require a sensitive, well-rounded approach that acknowledges everyone's experiences and needs. Advocacy must also extend to calling for more resources and support systems, specifically for non-abused siblings. These siblings are often forgotten. They're left to navigate their emotions and the shifting family na landscape completely on their own. Yet their role in the family's healing process is crucial. They're the ones that may help bridge the gap between the victim and the rest of the family, who may be carrying unspoken burdens or who just need just as much support to process the trauma and move forward. So think about it this way. When a family faces sibling sexual abuse, it's like a tree struck by lightning. The most visible damage is where the lightning hit, where the abuse occurred. But the shockwaves travel down through the branches, into the trunk, and even to the very roots of the tree. Every part of the tree feels the impact. If we only focus on repairing the point at the point of impact, the tree might survive, but it won't thrive. To truly heal, we have to nurture the entire tree, every branch, every root, every leaf. In practical terms, this means advocating for policies that recognize the full scope of sibling sexual abuse, full scope of the impact of sibling sexual abuse, and for creating support networks that address the needs of the whole family. It's about pushing for research that gives us the data we need to develop better interventions and the services that offer not just immediate help, but long-term support. It's about changing the conversation from one that's reactive and narrow to one that's proactive and inclusive and compassionate. We have to do this. As we look to the future, our goal should be to create a world where no family has to face sibling sexual abuse alone. Hopefully eradicate it completely. But if it happens, where the complexities of sibling dynamics are understood and where every single member of the family has the resources that they need to heal. This isn't just about helping families survive. It's about helping them find a way to thrive again, even after the most devastating of circumstances. So, as we come to the end of this conversation, I want to take a moment to acknowledge that talking about sibling sexual abuse isn't easy. It's a subject that can stir up a lot of difficult emotions, and it's something that many people prefer to avoid. But avoiding it doesn't make it go away. It doesn't mean it doesn't exist. In fact, it's the silence that allows the pain and trauma to linger. It's the silence that allows this to continue and to affect not just the survivor and the perpetrator, but everyone in the family, and for it to continue to happen in families. So we've explored how sibling sexual abuse is more than just an issue between two individuals. It's a family-wide trauma that ripples through relationships, emotions, and the very fabric of family life. The impact is deep and long-lasting, touching parents, non-abused siblings, and extended family members. It's not something that can be swept under the rug or handled with a one-size-fits-all approach. It requires us to open our eyes and our hearts and our minds to the full scope of what's happening and to recognize that every member of the family needs care and support. So, with this recognition, for me anyway, comes hope When we start to acknowledge sibling sexual abuse for what it is, a significant issue that affects the entire family system, and we open the door to healing, we create space for conversations that are honest, compassionate, and absolutely necessary. These conversations are the first steps towards breaking the silence, reducing the shame, and ensuring that no one has to go through this alone. So I encourage you to take this conversation into your lives. Whether sibling sexual abuse has touched you personally or not, you can make a difference. Engage in open, honest discussions with those around you. Educate yourself and others. Advocate for comprehensive family-centered support that addresses the needs of every person involved. It's through these actions, small as they might seem, that we can start to create a culture of understanding, empathy, and healing. And these conversations are challenging, but they are so incredibly important. We've talked about the impact of si sibling sexual abuse on entire families, and now it's time to turn that awareness into action. So I want to invite you to take a step further. First and foremost, I want to hear from you. Whether you have experienced sibling sexual abuse, know someone who has, or you're just learning about the issue for the first time, your voice matters. Maybe something in today's episode resonated with you, or perhaps it brought up questions or feelings or memories that you didn't expect. Whatever it is, I encourage you to share your thoughts and your stories and your questions. Head over to my website at leilareyes.com, LeilaReyes, leilareyes.com, and click on the Freedom Project. This is a space where you can share your story. It might be exactly what someone else needs to hear to feel a little bit less alone, or it might be something that you need to say in order to start your own healing process. Or it might, and if you're someone who's caused this type of harm, it might be the first step in taking responsibility and having your own healing. So remember, sharing can be powerful, not just for others, but for yourself. The comments there on the Freedom Project are moderated, so I'll take a look at them before they're posted. And so sharing can be very powerful for others and for yourself. It's a way to release the weight of what you've been carrying, to connect with others who understand, and to begin the healing process. You don't have to have all the answers. Just sharing your experience or your thoughts is enough to start. You never know who might be listening, or how your words might make a difference in their life, or how your words might start to make a difference in your life as well. So remember, healing doesn't happen in isolation, it happens in connection. We heal through the love and support of those around us, through the willingness to confront the hard truths, and through the courage to keep moving forward, even when the path is unclear. So, if you or someone you know is dealing with the effects of sibling sexual abuse, know that there is help out there and that you don't have to walk this road alone. So, let's make a commitment together to be the kind of people who listen, who care, and who support one another through the most challenging times. By doing so, we can help to mend the wounds of the past and build a future where every family has the opportunity to heal and thrive. So thank you from the bottom of my heart for being part of this conversation, for listening, for anything that you might share, for your willingness to engage with this difficult topic. It's a powerful step toward change. So let's keep talking, keep supporting, keep healing, one step at a time, together. And I also want to make sure that if you or someone you love is affected by sibling sexual abuse, that you know where to turn for help. Healing isn't something that anyone should have to do alone. And so there are resources available to support you on the journey. And here are a few places to start. There are hotlines. You can research this. You can Google this. Look for hotlines. If you need immediate support or someone to talk to, there are hotlines available. You can connect with trained professionals who understand what you're going through. Sometimes the most powerful healing comes from connecting with others who have walked a similar path. I've certainly found this to be true. I've gained so much support in the work that I do, just hearing other people's stories, knowing that I'm not alone, and making sure that I share my story so people know that they're not alone. Support groups offer a safe space to share your experience and find strength in community. So keep an eye on my website for openings in my support groups, but or find one that you resonate with, mine or someone else's. And there are websites dedicated to providing information and resources and support for survivors of sibling sexual abuse and their families. And these sites can help you learn more about abuse, to help you find local resources and connect with others who understand what you're going through. So whether you're reaching out for yourself or someone else, these resources are here to help you navigate this journey with the support that you deserve and need. So if there's one thing I want you to take away from today's episode, it's this: you are not alone. Whether you're a survivor, a sibling, a parent, or just someone who cares, or a perpetrator, there are people who understand what you're going through and who want to help. Healing is possible, but it starts with taking that first step, whether it's sharing your story, reaching out for help, or simply learning more about abuse and the impacts of it on our lives. Every step counts, no matter how small. Together, we can create a world where no one has to suffer in silence and where healing and hope are always within reach. So thank you for being part of this journey with me. I'm glad that I don't have to do this alone. Your courage, compassion, and willingness to engage with these tough topics makes all the difference. So until next time, take care of yourselves and each other.